InvestorIdeas.com podcast.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of InvestorIdeas.com podcast. In today's podcast, I'm going to be going over a few public company announcements, the reintroduction of the Safe Banking Act in the U.S., a cannabis-related execution in Singapore, as well as cannabis in sports. First, starting with Trulieve Cannabis Corporation, trading on the CSE as TRUL and the OTCQX as TCNNF, who announced the grand opening of Georgia's first medical cannabis dispensary in Macon. The new dispensary is open from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., 7 days a week, and is located at 3556 Riverside Drive. Now, Trulieve is hosting a grand opening celebration today at 9:30 a.m. with a ribbon cutting, food trucks, and merchandise giveaways. And the company plans to open three more dispensaries this year, located in Columbus, Newman, and Pooler. We believe that access to medical cannabis improves lives, and Trulieve is proud to be the first to provide that access to the state of Georgia, said Kim Rivers, CEO of Trulieve. We look forward to providing high-quality products and an elite experience. So, Trulieve, if you've been paying attention this week, their shares rose fairly dramatically, at least within the cannabis space right now. It hasn't been a great time for a lot of the cannabis stocks, as I'm sure most people paying attention to the space are well aware. But there was a little bit of a rallying for Trulieve this week. Most of that probably was related to news surrounding the Safe Banking Act. But I will say it is good that they're expanding into Georgia. It's also good to see that there's now medical cannabis in Georgia. Obviously, you're going to hear more announcements about that over the next coming months. And it is good to see how that's going to be expanding. And I think that Georgia will be a good place to pay attention to because they were such a holdout for such a long time. To see how their medical program expands, how they differ from some of the other medical programs within other states, and if this does put them on track to get to recreational and what sort of time frame that goes around in. I think that, again, when you're looking at each individual state within the U.S., it's a good little petri dish of sort of an experiment of how these industries are going to evolve over time and what you're going to see as possibly a federal framework. Or at least maybe federal standardization when it comes to federal legalization, which could eventually happen in the U.S. I don't expect that it's going to be happening anytime soon. I'll be talking about that more when I talk about the Safe Banking Act. But I think that there's slowly being more and more sort of data and information that's pointing towards at some point within the U.S. There will need to be some sort of federal guidelines when it comes to packaging, when it comes to quantities of selling, when it comes to just kind of the overall standardization of the industry within the U.S. I think that you'll still have state individual laws regarding medical, recreational, and licensing, but I think in the end you are going to need, or at least there's a lot of people pushing for some sort of federal guidelines. Obviously, people are also looking more towards federal decriminalization, but like I said, Georgia, and specifically Trulieve within Georgia right now, will be a good place to pay attention to of how this medical program expands, what kind of reaction they get from the communities, and what kind of sales and overall numbers you see coming out of Trulieve over the next couple of quarters. Looking next at TerrAscend Corporation, trading on the CSE as TER and the OTCQX as TRSSF, who announced has entered into a five-year licensing agreement with the international cannabis brand Cookies to cultivate and manufacture cookie products in Maryland. Now, the agreement provides Maryland patients and future adult customers access to all of Cookies' current flavors, including Gary Payton, Cereal Milk, Georgia Pie, The Soap, Medellin, and Pancakes. And Cookies strains and products are now available in Maryland in limited quantities at both company-owned retail as well as third-party dispensary locations. Now, on January 30th, TerrAscend announced the acquisition of Allegany Medical Marijuana Dispensary, which is a high-performing medical dispensary in Cumberland, Maryland, that will be rebranded as the Apothecarium, and the company has also completed and operationalized a state-of-the-art 156,000-square-foot cultivation facility in Hagerstown. Using the same strategy implemented and executed in New Jersey a year ago, Maryland is poised to bring similar success as the state prepares to launch its adult-use program in July, said Jason Wild, executive chairman of TerrAscend. TerrAscend is excited to extend this partnership and bring Cookies' full menu of high-quality genetics to Maryland, and we look forward to providing patients and future adult-use customers with more of the world-class products and experience they deserve. So again, another state to be paying attention to is the expansion into Maryland. I do like seeing from TerrAscend Corp that they are following somewhat of a recipe as far as how they're entering into states, what kind of agreements they're going to be looking at, and how their strategies are sort of deployed. And I think that that's something to pay attention to when you're looking at a lot of these MSOs, is how their strategies change or maybe stay the same as they enter into different markets, what the success rate is of those different strategies as they enter into each market, and sort of how they have to adapt and change as that market is grown out and more established. And I do think that more and more you are starting to see what I think a lot of people have been looking for, which is some sort of brand awareness for cookies. They actually have done a really good job of building out their brand. I will say that there's also the cookies brand of accessories that I don't think are directly linked, but they might be. I can't remember right now. But even still, I think that in general, those two things working together of having the accessories brand and then also having the actual cannabis brand is starting to build that it out. And as, again, you bring in these brands into new markets, it establishes it as an actual total U.S. brand as opposed to a simply a state brand or, you know, a brand that's well known in a certain district within a state. And a lot of these are still coming out of California. So I do think that if you're looking at where the sort of brands build from, California is still the market to pay attention to. Nevada is doing pretty well and is quite established these days, but doesn't have quite the consistent market that California does have. And I would say that if you listen to any of the interviews we've had in the past with different dispensary owners or cultivators or business operators in California, a lot of what they talk about is the fact that it's just such a hyper-competitive environment that in order to succeed and survive, you kind of have to be the best of the best. And because of that, when you go into other markets and other states, it's kind of a guarantee that that brand will carry forward and that it'll be fairly successful because it's already been very much tested out within the landscape of the California market. So I do like seeing, like I said, from a MSO standpoint, that these companies are trying to employ similar strategies, seeing what works and trying to bring that success into new markets. And like I said, there's a few markets like Maryland and Georgia that it would be good to pay attention to over the next couple of quarters because they are going to expand a little bit. You're going to see more companies enter into those spaces, and you are going to see, again, what kind of succeeds within what markets. Although I think in general now we're starting to see that there's a pretty basic recipe for success and a basic recipe for failure. And I think most of that's pretty well known to most of these companies by now. So you are starting to see them just avoid certain issues in the past that they would have kind of jumped into head first. You are seeing a little bit of a slower and more cautious approach into each of these new markets, which I think is a smart thing. And in general, is only going to benefit the consumers and the companies as well, because it just makes it seem very legitimized. Now, one of the major news stories that has seen a lot of cannabis stocks rallying was a group of bipartisan lawmakers who have reintroduced the Secure and Fair Enforcement Banking Act in the House and Senate on Wednesday. After the legislation designed to free up banking services for the cannabis industry stalled in last year's Congress. Now, the bill, which has been tweaked since the last session, was introduced by Senator Jeff Merkley, Senator Steve Daines, Representative Dave Joyce, and Representative Earl Blumenauer. Now, if the critical and banking financial protections advance through committees, they could see a vote in the Senate floor for the first time, and the bill, which has always had strong bipartisan support, passed in the House 7 times previously. Now, that kind of should tell you what the potential success of this is going to be, is that this has been a story we've heard about a lot. I'll continue to go on, but obviously, as much as there's a lot of support and a lot of optimism surrounding this bill, it's been something that's been discussed several times in the past. It's been something that has been pushed almost to the Senate floor many times in the past, hasn't gone there, and we don't really see any traction once it leaves the House. And again, it's been passed 7 times previously. For the first time, we have a path to safe banking to move through the Senate Banking Committee and to get a vote on the floor of the Senate, Merkley said in a statement. Let's make 2023 the year that we get this bill signed into law so we can ensure that all legal cannabis businesses have access to the financial services they need to help keep their employees, their businesses, and their communities safe. Now, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer expressed his support for the legislation on Thursday and said he would make sure the legislation included criminal justice provisions when it reaches the floor. Now, this would be where some of the people who have been paying attention to the Safe Banking Act would add a lot of skepticism and comments, because this is kind of the problem when you're looking at why this bill hasn't passed in the past, is the fact that every time it starts to get some success, it gets the bipartisan support, there's either people from the Republican Party or people from the Democratic Party who start pushing in extra elements. Chuck Schumer, unfortunately, as much as he's been one of the main ralliers of this bill, has also been one of the main issues when it comes to this bill's success. Always trying to push through criminal justice reform provisions, which unfortunately do not gain the same bipartisan support. And this is where you kind of have to ask the difficult question of, you know, do you want to get a small short-term success, or do you want to aim for the grander success and possibly fail? And it's something that, when you're looking at cannabis legislation, has been an issue many times in the past, is often doesn't matter whether it's Republican side or the Democratic side, which does this, both parties have been guilty of this, which is basically over-pushing or trying to add in extra sort of addendums or different pieces of legislation attached to this bill. Now, if you're just pushing through safe banking, I think most people are in support of that. But the problem every time becomes, well, we also need to include something about criminal justice reform. We also need to include something about decriminalization. We also need to include something about this, that, or the other. And that's usually where you start to lose the support, and that's usually where this whole bill falls apart. So stocks like Trulieve and TerrAscend saw their shares rise by double-digit percentages, and the bipartisan nature of the Safe Banking Act's reintroduction appeared to boost hopes to basically offer some relief for the industry. The Safe Banking Act will provide urgently needed relief to the cannabis businesses of all sizes and act as a stepping stone to broader reforms, said Matt Darin, CEO of multi-state cannabis operator Curaleaf Holdings, in a statement after the bill's reintroduction. This legislation will save lives and livelihoods, and it's past time that Congress addresses the irrational, unfair, and unsafe prohibition of basic banking services to state-legal cannabis businesses, said Blumenauer, founder and co-chair of the Congressional Cannabis Caucus. So, again, it seems like this is a news story that has repeated itself several times over the last few years. We heard this in 2021 and 2022, and even early in 2020. And no matter how this is discussed, no matter how this is put forward, we kind of see the same sort of Charlie Brown football pulling out scenario every time, where yes, it'll pass the House, yes, it'll seem like it's on its way to the Senate, and then something will happen. Again, some sort of addition will be added to this, or there will be some sort of other disaster or something that comes up to either get people to ignore this bill or not have the time for it, or again, to kind of overreach and delegitimize the bill. So I think that while it's very good to see some optimism return to the cannabis sector, to see some stocks rallying, to see some interest from investors, to see some optimism overall, I think that people should be very realistic and sort of skeptical of how far this is going to go until we actually see this go through the Senate. I wouldn't really hold my breath for this. And the next two stories are going to kind of illustrate that even though there's a lot of people who are attached to the industry or who use cannabis or who understand the value of cannabis, who think it's so obvious that this should be put through, it's so obvious that this should be accessible, we have legal businesses in the U.S. The next two stories about a man being convicted and executed in Singapore, as well as a U.S. athlete having her medals taken away, kind of exposes the reality, which is that no matter how much you get kind of stuck in the cannabis bubble of believing that this is going to be everywhere, I mean, obviously, it's just great stuff. Why would people not want this? The vast majority of people, and especially people within government positions around the world, are still really hesitant, if not outright against cannabis in all possible scenarios, and are willing to go to pretty harsh extremes to prove that. So, in a recent story from CNN, a Singaporean man was convicted of trying to traffic around 2.2 pounds of cannabis and was executed on Wednesday, a sentence that has been heavily condemned by civil rights groups and campaigners, as well as those within the cannabis industry, for its severity at a time when many other nations, including neighboring countries, have adopted a more lenient approach towards drugs and capital punishment. Now, while cannabis has been legalized in a growing number of nations worldwide, Singapore maintains some of the world's harshest drug laws, and its government remains adamant that capital punishment works to deter drug traffickers and must remain in place to maintain public safety. So, Tangaraju Supia was a 46-year-old Singaporean, and he was put to death on Wednesday in Changi Prison, Singapore Prison Service said in a brief statement. Now, his sister Lilavathi told CNN that her brother had been charged and that the family had received a death certificate, and it was Singapore's first execution in 6 months. In the days leading up to Tangaraju's being sent to the gallows, family members and activists made public appeals for clemency and questioned the safety of his conviction. And the European Union's office in the city-state and the United Nations Rights Office had also called for Singapore not to carry out this hanging. Singapore's pre-execution photos seek to soften a policy activists say doesn't work, and Tangaraju was sentenced to death in 2018 for abetting the trafficking of more than 1 kilogram of cannabis, according to a statement from the Central Narcotics Bureau. The court found that he was in phone communication with two other men caught trying to smuggle cannabis into Singapore. Now, Tangaraju was accorded full due process under the law and had access to legal counsel throughout the process, CNB's statement said, while describing capital punishment as part of Singapore's comprehensive harm prevention strategy. Tangaraju's conviction relied mainly on statements from his police interrogation, taken without a lawyer and interpreter present, and the testimony of his two accused was one of which has had his charges dismissed, Amnesty International said. Now, in countries that have not yet abolished this punishment, international safeguards require that the death penalty be imposed only when the guilt of the person charged is based upon clear and convincing evidence, leaving no room for the alternative explanation of the facts, and after a legal process which gives all possible safeguards to ensure a fair trial, Amnesty also added. So, there's a lot of, debate from a lot of different groups around the legitimacy of the case against Tangaraju, the sort of need to actually carry out the death sentence for him. and really, it just exposes again that even though places like Thailand have decriminalized and you've seen other Southeast Asian countries looking to change their policies around cannabis, there's still countries there that are willing to hang a person for trafficking 2 pounds of cannabis, which just seems impossible. It seems impossible when you live in Canada or the U.S. You have dispensaries on street corners similar to the fashion of a Starbucks, and in other parts of the world, people are being hanged for bringing, you know, a couple of pounds of cannabis and not even bringing it in, just having phone calls basically to discuss bringing it in. And again, the evidence wasn't clear-cut. There's going to be probably continued petitions from Amnesty International and other groups. I think that this case will probably continue to build up the discussion around international bodies making cannabis a criminal substance. I know that the UN had recently discussed decriminalizing basically all drug policies. And I think that there is that. It's a difficult discussion because at the same time, you don't want to just say that, you know, all drugs are legal now, everything's good, because there are obviously drugs like meth and heroin and fentanyl, which have a lot of risks associated with them and can be cut with other substances, including basically it's mostly fentanyl and all of it. But realistically, you're never going to have a society completely get on board with just decriminalizing everything all the time. Even in Portugal, there still are some sort of rehab and control facilities in place to basically limit the amount of risk that could be associated with that. And I think that you have to kind of look at it as a neighborhood by neighborhood crisis or problem that needs to be looked at. Is in some neighborhoods, they can kind of have different drug policies than in others, similar to like a state by state policy in the U.S. And I think that each country will adopt its own sort of legislation, but it's pretty dark to realize that people are still getting killed, publicly hanged, for bringing in cannabis to a company or to a country, especially when, again, there's multiple countries surrounding Singapore that have adopted a different policy. And hopefully this does push international bodies to say, it's enough of this. We need to radically change our policies around cannabis specifically. I don't think you need to, you know, dramatically try to overreach and say everything's legal all the time now in every country. I think that you're going to get too much pushback on that, but I think that it's pretty easy to find enough justification, enough data, enough science, enough medical testimony, all over the world to basically say that, yeah, cannabis should definitely be treated as some sort of medicine, maybe an over-the-counter, under-the-counter pharmaceutical, a prescription pharmaceutical, I think is, you know, at the very least where it should be considered is, yes, you need to maybe get a prescription for it in most parts of the world, but this isn't a dangerous substance. This isn't something that you need to have, sort of public health and safety standards about. This is something that's pretty generic. It causes less deaths than aspirin. So if we're going to make aspirin available all over the world and cough syrup available all over the world, I'm pretty sure you can make cannabis available all over the world. But again, as much as there's optimism surrounding things like the Safe Banking Act and cannabis is going to be federally decriminalized in the U.S. and it's going to be legal all over the world, etc., this very much exposes the reality. A person lost their life because of this, which again just seems impossible when you're sitting around getting high to think that a person's dying for this. But it's also the same type of impossibility when you think about the fact that, again, as people are buying weed from a dispensary, there's people in that same state who are in jail and possibly have served anywhere from 5 to 10 years and up for cannabis-related offenses while people are selling and buying weed in the same state. So that's a reality in the U.S. That's also a reality in Canada, is we have people who are still getting arrested for cannabis-related offenses. We have people who are still in jail for cannabis-related offenses as we're all smoking weed and talking about weed and talking about the benefits of it and all these things. There's people facing real consequences for these drugs and basically trying to push for more access to them. So in other recent news, U.S. long jumper Tara Davis Woodhull has been stripped of her recent national indoor title and hit with a one-month suspension after a positive test for cannabis, said the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency, who announced on Tuesday. Now, the U.S. ADA said Davis tested positive for THC, a chemical found in cannabis, and her positive test was from the result of a sample collected in the competition at 2023 U.S. Track and Field Indoor Championships in Albuquerque, New Mexico on February 17th, the same day she had won the title with a jump of 6.99 meters. Davis Woodhull, 23, has already completed her suspension, which she began serving on March of 21st. Now, the positive test means that Davis Woodhull lost her title, as she was disqualified from all competitive results obtained on the subsequent day, including forfeiture of any medals, points, and prizes. Cannabis is still considered a prohibited substance under the World Anti-Doping Agency rules, so the WADA. WADA seeks input on each year's updated version of prohibited lists, said the USADA's press release states. And the USADA has advocated and will continue to advocate to the WADA, the rulemaker, to treat marijuana in a fairer and more effective way to identify true in-competition use. Now, per WADA rules, THC allows for a reduced 3-month suspension if the athlete establishes the substance was taken out of the competition and unrelated to sports performance. And the USADA said that Davis Woodhull's case was reduced to 1 month for those reasons and because she completed a substance abuse treatment program for her use of cannabis. In 2021, the U.S. sprinter Sha'Carri Richardson had initially booked her spot in the Tokyo Olympics with a runaway victory in the women's 100 meters at the U.S. Olympic track and field trials in Eugene, Oregon, only to have her title stripped after testing positive for marijuana. Now, Richardson was suspended for a month, and the USA Track and Field opted not to select her as part of the women's 4x100-meter relay pool after her suspension ended. And this case shows some of the continued sort of hypocrisy and insanity within the U.S. and the rest of the world, as only months ago, the U.S. was actively rallying and discussing the fight to bring the WNBA star Brittany Griner home from Russia, who had been charged for cannabis-related offenses in Russia. And, of course, she was traded for an arms dealer on behalf of President Joe Biden and his office. And, you know, this saw a bunch of athletes and celebrities and a bunch of different groups all over the country rallying to get her back. And a lot of people stated at the time, especially people from the cannabis industry, how kind of insane this was. Because, again, even though you're being like, we got to get her back from Russia and Russia's so evil for charging her with a cannabis offense, there's still people in jail in the U.S. for cannabis-related offenses. So, again, when you're discussing things like the Safe Banking Act and where this industry is going to head and how it's going to keep building out, don't forget stories like these of people being executed, athletes losing their titles and their medals. And it's weird with THC as far as how it's treated as a drug within the sports world, because you now have had in recent news, which we talked about in one of my last podcasts, of the NBA changing their policy around testing for THC. The NFL has done the same. There's people, basically most of the basketball players and NFL players are actually getting high during the game. And so in some instances, you're seeing that THC has been treated as a performance-enhancing substance, which is somewhat confusing. And then at the other point, it's basically being treated as it's a dangerous substance, which could cause accidents or harm to the athlete. And most endurance athletes, a lot of runners, they're all over the place, basically citing that THC has helped them dramatically with their recovery time, with their overall performance, with sort of their mental health during, you know, athletic season and training season. And the same thing from most other athletes within different sports arenas. And so it's a very weird, crazy thing that most athletes, if you ask them honestly, are saying cannabis really helps them. It's very beneficial. The alternative as far as pain medication is going to be opiate-based for most of them, which is much more risky and obviously has a lot of negative press associated with it. But for some reason, that's all legal and cannabis is illegal. And so again, when we're looking at where this industry is going to head, and you know, I myself am often caught up in the optimism of cannabis is going to be everywhere and it's going to change society for the world. And we're just going to live in a different world now because cannabis is going to replace alcohol and our social culture is going to be different and our medical culture is going to be different. And there's all these great optimistic ideas. That's because I also look at cannabis news all the time. But I do forget a lot of the time that for the vast majority of the world, this is still treated as, you know, the devil's lettuce. It's still very terrifying. Keep it away from your children. Keep it away from everybody because it's going to kill people. And in some instances, like in Singapore, it technically does. So definitely disturbing realities to face. That's all for today's podcast. Enjoy the rest of your day. That's all for today's podcast. Podcast is now a certified word trademark on the blockchain through Cognate Incorporated ZM certification. InvestorIdeas.com podcasts are also available on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play Music, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, and TuneIn. If you'd like to be a guest or sponsor of this podcast, please contact InvestorIdeas.com. Investor Ideas reminds all listeners to read our disclaimers and disclosures on the InvestorIdeas.com website, and this podcast is not an endorsement to buy products or services or securities. Investors are reminded that all investments involve risk and possible loss of investment. Investor Ideas does not condone the use of cannabis except where permissible by law. Our site does not possess, distribute, or sell cannabis products.